everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you as we're off and rolling on the Friday, February 7th, 2025. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the program. Tom, the numbers are in. I was guessing that January would go down as the coldest in 25 years. I was off a little bit. It was the coldest in 10 years. It felt like it was the coldest in a long time, though.
Did it really?
Yeah. January was cold.
Okay. I guess I wasn't paying attention.
You weren't. You were still wearing short sleeves, but you wear short sleeves year-round, right?
Yeah, there you go. Because I'm indoors.
Of course. All right. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, where we've got five radio stations under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. Last month, we began our 15th year with the radio show, and my 37th in Tucson broadcasting. Gee, I hate to say it. Maybe I shouldn't, but I will. Close to 60 years, starting in the media as an intern in Chicago in 1967. So there you are. I don't say that very often, but I still look like I started in broadcasting at 12 years old, right, Leah Marquez?
Absolutely.
Peterson is with me in studio, along with Paul Ingram from the TucsonSentinel.com. When we do our telephone interviews, and folks are always welcome to call in 790-2040, that is our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, Paul Ingram's team over at TucsonSentinel.com with Dylan and the crew. Paul, we really thank Tucson Sentinel for supporting our program. Thanks.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Dan Shear and his group, and then Caitlin Schmidt and her new online news service, Tucson Spotlight, also big supporters. Leah Marquez Peterson is with us. Leah, good to see you.
Yeah, great to be back. Thanks, Bill.
Settle back now, Leah, while I give the full introduction. Leah Marquez Peterson, one of five Arizona Corporation Commissioners. She was elected to a second four-year term on the board last November. Leah, a Republican and the only commissioner not based in Maricopa County. She's the first Latina to serve in a statewide seat in the state of Arizona. And recently, she was appointed as a board member, very prestigious organization for those in your business, Leah, to the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. Big deal. I think you're the first one ever to sit on that board from Arizona.
I believe so, and it's quite an honor.
Well, there you go. The five commissioners oversee, and we always need to tell people what the heck the ACC does. Mm-hmm. The five commissioners oversee public utilities, business incorporation. When I started my radio show and I became an LLC, I had to file with the Arizona Corporation Commission to go through the paperwork, and that's the way it works to get an LLC in Arizona. And, of course, railroad and pipeline systems, those railways that go through Arizona and the pipelines that go through Arizona are subject to your regulation, correct?
Yes, they
regulatory.
Are. Regulatory?
Yes. Arizona, one of only seven states that have constitutionally formed commissions. Always good to see you. And I do want to give Paul Ingram his due with a proper introduction. Paul was the top vote getter at the Arizona Press Club for Arizona News Photographer of the Year.
Correct.
Correct. There
yep.
you go. And you, I think you won some other editorial stuff too, right?
Yeah, we picked up a couple of awards. We did mm-hmm. well this year. So yeah, I got a couple of them for immigration reporting, Spot News, a few other things. So
good.
Yeah.
Good for you. Congratulations,
you.
Paul.
Congratulations.
Senior reporter at the TucsonSentinel.com. Let's begin, Leah, with the big news, front page story yesterday about the three biggies that are our power players in this state, Tucson Electric Power, Arizona Public Service, and Salt River Project, announced they're seriously looking at another building a nuclear power plant, a new one.
Yeah, it was very exciting news to hear that they're starting evaluation.
Is that something you had heard was coming or kind of had to keep it quiet?
Let's back into kind of, I guess, why.
Yeah.
Why are we having these conversations?
Yeah.
We're seeing incredible energy demand throughout the state of Arizona. We continue to be one of the fastest growing states in the country. But with the use of all the smartphones every one of us is carrying,
yeah,
ChatGPT, uploading to the cloud, we need more data centers throughout the nation. We've seen a lot of growth in semiconductor industries and industrial and commercial companies, especially in Maricopa County. So we've heard from APS and SRP in particular about a 40 to 50% increase in energy demand over the next 7 years.
Wow.
With that demand, we can't simply build fast enough to provide that energy resource or that generation in the state. One of the cleanest sources of power is nuclear energy. And for those listening, they may not realize we have one of the largest nuclear power plants in the country in Phoenix area. It's called Palo Verde. Presents about 30% of the energy for the state, what we need. And so certainly if we could build another one of those and it was affordable, that would be a great answer. You've heard commissioners across the nation, and certainly I've been co-chairing actually a task force on advanced nuclear activity in the state from an energy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The future is really small modular nuclear reactors. So the press release that came out from APS, mm-hmm, SRP, and TEP just yesterday was really an evaluation, looking at options, applying for the Department of Energy grants. This isn't something that they'll see anytime in the near term. This will take quite a number of years as we work through it, and it's not affordable yet. So we need to make sure that if our regulated utilities are moving forward on nuclear energy, there may be some other innovative ways to do this so it's not being paid for entirely by ratepayers in the short term.
The regulatory stream is going to be extensive to get something like this off the ground.
It is, and that's one of the reasons the task force I'm on is really talking to commissioners across the nation about what do we need to do now with our, whether it's a state legislatures, because every state's different, or the governor offices or the state energy offices across the nation, to kind of streamline processes to ensure that we can build these in 5, 10, 15 years. Lots of new technology coming out, a lot of innovation in this space. I'm hearing from new companies operating in this area frequently. So we need to be exploring it. And in fact, our commission just opened a docket, which is like an online legal folder where we're capturing information just this week so that we can start continuing to track this information for Arizona.
All right, let's bring in Paul.
One of the things I thought was really interesting is, and I wrote about this yesterday, is of course the TEP and all the other utilities are really thinking about this thing. There seem to be two really striking parts of it. I mean, there's a $900 million grant that Arizona may win, hopefully, that would help kind of back this program and also set up the regulatory. But there was also the thing about the SMRs themselves. Can you talk about like why the small modular reactors are sort of maybe different than Palo Verde?
Right. That's a good question. So let's broaden the conversation even a little further. We have heard commitments from the utilities that they'll be closing their coal plants in 2031, 2032. Mm-hmm. So you have these kind of stranded assets that would be out there in rural Arizona primarily that have great transmission lines, and there's an opportunity there. Don't know yet what will occur in each of these communities, Springerville, some of the tribal nations that have our coal plants, but there's a lot of discussion on what could occur. As that economic development plan or discussion occurs, small modular nuclear comes up again and again. What is an SMR, small modular nuclear? It means that components of that plant are built in a factory rather than being built on site. So it's more component pieces that are easier to pull together, and it's a much smaller footprint than a Palo Verde nuclear power plant. There's also micronuclear, which I've heard described as putting a nuclear power in the back of a flatbed truck and pulling it in as needed. I mean, that size of... So, but all this
Gee,
is...
I've got one in the parking lot.
Future and innovative. Yeah. So is there a role for SMRs in the future at our coal plant facilities that will close potentially? Who knows?
Right.
The bottom line, though, is right now it's not affordable. Very expensive. You've heard projects pending in Wyoming and Utah had conversations, and Canada is talking about a number of SMRs. And so we need to keep an eye on this. And if our three utilities, as they have banded together to seek grant funding to look at what is that opportunity in Arizona, that would be pretty neat. The other piece is from my perspective as one commissioner, the deeper pockets in our nation are really the tech companies and the data centers.
Right.
What role do the data centers have in funding SMR development in the future that could be a win-win for Arizona ratepayers. I mean, I've put that out there publicly for at least over a year. Mm-hmm. I know that Google has a nuclear division now. I mean, they're having a lot of conversations, but it's all still work in progress.
Because the data centers are so power hungry, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about why the coal plants are closing? I mean, that's been something that's been happening for a while. The Navajo Station just recently closed. What's driving those closures? Is it the
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'll tell you, we are focused on incredible energy demand, as I talked about, and an all of the above approach. So the five commissioners, we have all said that publicly. That means we do support coal and natural gas and utility scale solar and battery and other hydroelectric and all the different sources of energy there are. The coal plants, however, though, have had EPA requirements that make them not feasible long-term financially. Mm-hmm. So okay. Right now, we went through a debate 5 years ago when I first came on the commission on whether or not we would have an energy mandate, which means, and we've talked about it on your show before, Bill, well, we have a certain percentage by a certain year mandated mm-hmm, by mm-hmm, the commission, mm-hmm. and we voted it down. So we do not have that in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. We have really followed what is the most reliable and affordable source for energy in the state. But fast forward, here we are 5 years later. Navajo Generating Station, as you mentioned, has been closed. That was about 6 years ago. And the utilities have determined that closing the coal plants in the future makes financial sense without putting all the additional environmental requirements that would have come in from the EPA. So those communities are well aware. One of my concerns as a commissioner was that the mayor and council and the workers in Springerville and in the tribal nations and other places throughout the state are aware that that is coming. The date set by the utilities are 2031, 2032. So what's the economic development plan? Because we certainly don't want ghost towns in those mm-hmm, areas. Mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. else could we be doing? I know I've had conversations with the Arizona Commerce Authority, which is our economic development group in the state. There's a lot of conversations occurring, but that's primarily why the coal plants are closing.
Yeah. All right, let's go to our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Matt has a question and a comment for Arizona Corporation Commissioner Leah Marquez Peterson. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, Leah, I gather you have a new board, and I could be wrong, but that's assembled. I'm not sure if you're still chair or if you guys voted new chair. I think you're the chair. I think they voted you, but I could be wrong. Real quickly, you had been involved with the commission about 6 or 7 years ago when they changed the rates for Ajo. Now, I've been following the Ajo school district, and they've been keeping me abreast of as the subsidy has slowly been going down and down and down. I think we're on year 6. I could be wrong, but I'm not sure if it was a 10-year agreement that they were going to help subsidize, AIC was going to help subsidize because of the increased cost that they had attributed to their repairs. I just hope that the commission would, you know, look again at AIC and see, you know, the cost benefit of that. Was it a fair deal with
okay.
them?
Okay. AIC being?
The Ajo Electric
Improvement
Utility
Company
or okay. District. Yeah. All right. So, Matt, thank you for calling in and asking your questions. I'm not the chair now. Every election cycle, we vote on a new chair. So the current chair is Kevin Thompson, who came from us from the Mesa area, and he's serving and doing a great job. We have two brand new commissioners, Rachel Walden and Renee Lopez. They are new to the seats. I was reelected, so I'm serving again. And then Nick Myers is also serving. So those are the five of us. I do recall the Ajo case. It was one of the first cases I heard as a new commissioner about 5.5 years ago. And I'll just say that it's a challenging situation, and I'm glad that we were able to work out something that was better for the community. It certainly wasn't the best situation. We regulate about 400 utilities across the state, and we often see challenges in how do we ensure that the right capital investments are being made so that the electricity or even the water being served or the wastewater is reliable and is something that can be continue to be provided to the communities, but at the most affordable rate. Sometimes when companies haven't invested in a proper pattern, making sure that whether it's their water infrastructure or electric utility infrastructure is necessary for the community, we see big increases in rates, and we do our very best to modify those to make something that's palatable, especially for the low-income families in the area. And I recall talking to Sharon Bronson at the time, and even yourself, Matt, when we worked on the Aho case. So,
okay.
And feel free to call my office too, Matt. I know you know how to find me.
Take a break right here. More with Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com and Leah Marquez Peterson from the Arizona Corporation Commission. It's Buckmaster on a Friday at 12:20. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Leah Marquez Peterson, one of five members of the Arizona Corporation Commission. She is really the only Southern Arizona representative, right?
Right, outside the Phoenix area.
Paul Ingram is here from TucsonSentinel.com. We've been talking in the first segment about Arizona's three largest utilities developing a new nuclear power plan. Want to kind of drift away from the nuclear power and talk a little bit about the securities portion of the ACC, that you guys regulate the securities in the state. And the Arizona Corporation Commission joined with, was one of 14 states joining in a $17 million enforcement settlement against the well-known national brokerage firm Edward D. Jones and Company. What was that about?
Yeah, it's interesting. People don't realize that we have a securities division. So unfortunately, we have an investigative team. We have a team of attorneys that do investigations and civil prosecution for cases like this throughout the year. We probably hear 3 to 4 to 5 of these every month and vote on them. In the Edwards Jones case, our team came to us and wanted to join this national effort, which we did, and we're happy to vote on that just recently. So that press release just came out, hot off the press.
So if someone even knows, Paul Ingram, what the ACC does, the Arizona Corporation Commission, it's probably safe to say they would think, oh, I know it's something to do with TEP and regulatory when it comes to that type of utility. But you were saying when Matt called that you guys oversee 400
utilities across the state.
Which would include small water companies?
Right. So the majority of them are water utilities. And it's an area actually I'm quite passionate about. Do a whole show on small water utilities, Bill, if you'd like. But we have, think of the division, the residential subdivisions that have been built up across our state. Most of the times the developers have built water utilities in the past and they've passed down through the generations. So we have 300 plus very small water utilities. And that's not often the best place for them to operate. It's a highly regulated, very complex situation that are serving communities. And we need to ensure as the regulators that they have the professional managerial expertise to operate that utility. So unfortunately, we see emergency rate cases pretty regularly also from our water utilities where they haven't invested in the pattern in which they should to make sure all the infrastructure is set. And we have to approve last minute surcharges and things like that.
How do we know that water is safe and coming from some of these little companies?
No, that's a good question. There are three agencies that primarily deal with our water utilities. We are the regulatory arm. Arizona Department of Environmental Quality is the quality of the water. And they are reaching out to every utility that has 25 connections or more. And then you have the Department of Water Resources is ensuring they have the quantity of water. So together, the three of us are managing that space.
And the vast majority of water utilities in this country, I think there's like 50,000 of them, are these small operators.
They are. And we have seen more and more acquisitions occurring across the state where either our current large four or five water utilities we have are acquiring others. We've seen some of that down here in Southern Arizona with Global Water or Arizona Water. There's another one is called. Or you see companies coming from outside and acquiring 15 to 20. But this is complicated, right? I mean, usually they might come into a water utility that hadn't invested properly and they come in and they build new tanks, build new lines, work with the community, maybe put in a customer service department and all that costs money.
Here's Paul Ingram from Tucson Sentinel.
So thinking about the water utilities, I mean, how does that work when a company comes in and buys up those utilities? I mean, what's sort of the standard practice from your point of view?
I'll explain it's challenging to buy and acquire a small water utility because it means many cases are getting in the truck, they're heading out to that rural community and negotiating a value with that owner. It's not typically market value. It's something that the owner has determined the utility is worth for them. We tend not to get involved in that transaction at all. That's something worked out with the new owner, unless the company's determined to be non-viable or is putting customers at risk or we're in some emergency situation or we have to put an interim manager in place because we do have the power to do that. So the company's coming in, acquiring the small water utility, making a determination of what kind of improvements they're going to have to make. We approve their financing. We approve any new programs they have. We approve the rates, ultimately, that they're going to charge. So it's how they're going to make these repairs, but in a way that doesn't create rate shock to the customers. Really depends, utility by utility, how urgent those improvements are needed and at what pattern they're going to be putting those improvements in.
It seems like the Arizona Corporation Commission has been hit a lot for rate changes. There's been rate changes for solar, there's rate changes for water. There's a lawsuit currently over, I think, solar rates. You know, so how do you define or how do you set rates? I mean, what is that? Is it just based on the economics of the place or?
It is. I mean, so one, we have staff, about 300 people that work at the Corporation Commission. People don't often realize that. Mm. And we have an entire utilities division that's managing those pieces, a securities division. We have a railroad and safety division and so on. So we have teams in place that include engineers, attorneys, financial analysts, and so on. For rates in particular, they must be the capital investments that's made need to be used in useful or prudent use of that capital investment, whatever it is.
Sure, we can't buy a water slide.
Right, exactly. So we are assessing each case that comes before us. We have an administrative law judge. That's another department within our commission that will have hearings and testimony, gather evidence, just like a civil case you might have heard of. People can weigh in. I encourage the public to write letters or emails or testify if they'd like. And then that material is put together in a recommended order to us. We serve kind of in a judicial slash legislative kind of body where we are responding to that case and voting in support or modifying that order even up to the very last minute. So it's gathering of a lot of information and from our perspective, making sure it's the very most prudent, useful use of the dollars that are ratepayer dollars.
Mm-hmm. And something not talked about much is railroad safety right. and how the ACC is involved there. Less than, I would say, an eighth of a mile from where we're broadcasting right now are quite a few railroad tracks right. in Tucson. Mm-hmm. So who manages the condition of those tracks? Is that a federal or a state responsibility?
So we have a very strong railroad and pipeline safety division. They've been recognized nationally for their work. The railroad side of that division, they're inspecting every mile of the railroad
really?
Tracks. When they're within the state, we have jurisdiction. When they go between the states, that is federal. So what typically, if I'm meeting with the mayor and council, let's say of a smaller towns mm-hmm. in rural Arizona, they'll typically ask me about their small water utility, if they've got one serving them, mm-hmm. and railroad crossings.
Mm-hmm.
So we oversee and approve those railroad crossings, whether it's Union Pacific or BNSF or whatever railroad is currently operating in that area.
If there was, and I hope this doesn't happen, but we do have railroad accidents from time to time mm-hmm. in the state of Arizona. Does a federal group come in to oversee the investigation?
We have had derailments
right.
and situations occur. Our
sure.
team responds immediately.
There was quite a well-known one within a year ago about up in Tempe.
Right. So
fire and everything
right.
else.
When that occurred, our team responded immediately. They determined it was federal jurisdiction, but we get frequent updates, if not every couple days, updates during that time period to understand what had occurred, where's the liability, how are they working with the communities, but that was federal jurisdiction, so they were doing the investigation on that one in particular.
How about pipelines, gasoline coming into
the
state?
Yeah, so we regulate Southwest Gas. We regulate we have oversight on pipeline safety for the Kinder Morgan, large natural gas pipelines coming mm-hmm. in. The Transwestern, most of our natural gas comes from Texas mm-hmm. And comes through our state headed towards California. So yes, we have oversight on the pipeline safety. It's one of the reasons we really promote 811, if you've heard that commercial on TV or radio.
Sure. Yeah.
When you're digging, you need to be dialing 811, whether you're residential or commercial, so you're not puncturing the pipeline that is underground.
Yeah, what about gasoline?
We don't regulate gasoline.
Because you used to be in the automotive gasoline business.
I'm a former gas station owner.
So, who's regulating that?
Well, we have pipeline safety on the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which includes the gasoline and the natural gas.
Okay.
But we aren't at all setting rates or anything to do with gasoline.
Hmm. So it's just as the gasoline moves through the pipeline, you're in charge of the pipeline. But once it shows up at the gas station, is that yours?
That's entirely separate.
That's entirely separate.
Getting back to the nuclear issue that we started with, today, building a power plant, I assume, is a lot different than your Three Mile Island variety. And when Three Mile Island happened, it pretty much put a damper on it. Everybody said, we're not going that direction. We're moving away from that feeling. Do the polls show that the public is more willing to consider nuclear power?
Yeah, I don't have polls at my fingertips, but I will tell you, as someone who just campaigned statewide every corner of the state, we're a very pro-nuclear attitude in the state of Arizona. People want clean energy, and nuclear is that kind of source. They value that one of our greatest assets in the state is the Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant. Mm-hmm. They're curious about small modular nuclear. What's it mean? What will this look like? I think it's very positive. When I look nationally at that, in that task force that I serve on through NARUC, which is our regulated utility commissioners, the state of Georgia just built two additional units. It was very expensive. It was over budget. I mean, we watched it very closely, but they have now a great asset for their state. Mm-hmm. At Palo Verde, I believe it's four units of nuclear plants, and we have an additional pad. So there's an opportunity there someday in the future. It's just been really expensive to build.
Mm-hmm.
So we're holding back on that and utilizing natural gas peaker plants, utility scale solar, utility scale battery. You see that really proliferating throughout the state, mm-hmm. more so than nuclear because of the expense at this point.
How about electric cars?
Yeah, I mean, that's been interesting to watch. I mean, California had more requirements in place, and you've kind of got the chicken and the egg issue. Do you have electric vehicle charging infrastructure, or do you wait till the cars are here? Mm-hmm. And who pays for that? I'm a believer that kind of growth must pay for growth. If electric vehicle infrastructure is needed, the electric vehicle users should be paying for that. Mm-hmm. And I think my fellow commissioners feel that way. So we did pass an electric vehicle statewide roadmap. That was probably 2 years ago. So we're staying engaged in that discussion. What role the utilities have in EV chargers is also a place that we participate. But it seems like the demand for electric vehicles kind of ebbs and flows. And right now, we haven't seen the number of models that I know were originally projected, so we're continuing to keep an eye on it.
A lot of people are not sort of backing away. There's a feeling that maybe, you know, I'll stick with my gas-powered car for a while and not go the electric route. I don't know.
Yeah, and then there are complexities people don't think about. I mean, if you have listeners listening now who drive electric vehicles, they should be charging during the daylight hours. That's when solar is the most prominent. People right. don't always realize they go home at night, plug in, and you're using non-renewable resources to fuel your electric vehicle, if you think about it that way. We also need more electric vehicle chargers in business locations, commercial locations, because that tends to be where you are during the day, multi-housing facilities. I mean, there's complexities to it that not everyone thinks about as they talk about building electric vehicle infrastructure in the state.
A listener just sent me a message on Facebook about how expensive it is and how much energy is needed just to cool the reactors up
true.
At Palo Verde.
It is true. So, I mean, all of that expense means, as one commissioner of the five, I'm comfortable with utilities evaluating, exploring, research, get a DOE grant, you know, work through that process. I necessarily don't want to see this action by the utilities in building the generation anytime soon. It's just still too expensive. And I think small modular nuclear is really the future.
All right, Paul, before we go back to you, Jeff has called us on line one with a question on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Jeff, you're with Leah Marquez Peterson. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I have a general question. I see Arizona as of 50 states, the best state in the country to generate electricity. Why wouldn't we expand Palo Verde? And I don't know the names of the two plants. One, they're both solar. There's two different types of solar over by, I believe it's by Quartzsite on the Colorado. Why don't we export electricity, whether it's privately or public or 50-50, however it worked out, and especially to the Californians, and separate those Californians from some of those heavy California dollars when they have their inevitable brownout every summer. Mm-hmm. Why can't we do that?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Good question. And we are doing that. So California has made decisions in their state that have put their grid at risk, in essence. So they have had rolling brownouts and different issues. Arizona Public Service has been selling excess power to California for many years. I mean, it's something that occurs frequently, especially when they have a high demand. But as a commissioner, as one of your regulators, it's important to me that first and foremost, Arizona ratepayers are taken care of first, mm-hmm. and then any excess money that they generate comes back to Arizona ratepayers. So we're very careful to watch that. We are also seeing a great introduction. I started this conversation with Bill and Paul about the incredible energy demand we're facing. We are building and third-party developers are coming to the state to build a lot of utility-scale solar and battery, natural gas peakers, as that makes sense. And nuclear is just the one that's a little bit beyond our fingertips at this point because it's too expensive. But you see a lot of build going on, especially up in Maricopa County and Pinal County. I just attended a ribbon cutting for Ørsted, which is like a global renewable energy developer company that came into Pinal County, built 300 megawatts of utility scale solar, 300 megawatts of battery. Mm. And I'll just say that's a lot.
Wow.
In terms of perspective. Mm. And they spent $1 billion on that.
Really?
That development. And they plan to do more of that in Arizona.
Where is that in Pinal County?
It's near Coolidge.
Wow.
In the farmlands there. So you see more of that. But one of the challenges we face as we go around the state is we do have folks saying, you know, not in my backyard. I don't want to see utility scale solar panels for miles. I don't want to see a natural gas peaker nearby. So we're working through a lot of that. And that's primarily with our County Board of Supervisors, Planning and Zoning Commissions, who are looking at those challenges county by county. There are 15 counties in Arizona. So our utilities are really certainly looking at what they can build in the near future.
Paul Ingram, we can squeeze in another question from you.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, in the last few weeks, and the Trump administration has stalled or frozen some projects, also some infrastructure, some funding for things. There's been a series of grants. There's like $153 million that's currently stalled that was for solar and other kinds of projects. Where's the Arizona Corporation Commission, you know, in making that argument that maybe these projects should be funded, that these things are important? It sounds like Arizona really needs energy, and you not only do want to pursue, natural gas, but also solar, wind, et cetera. So, you know, what do you think you'd want to do in, you know, convincing folks that we need to have that money and that infrastructure and that investment?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're watching it very carefully. I mean, obviously it created a lot of angst and concern when IRA funds, which is primarily where those federal dollars are coming from, were frozen. And I understand from a presidential administration perspective that they want to freeze and look and assess before money just continues to flow. But it has created a lot of concern because in some cases, contracts have been signed, commitments have been made. So we're just watching it project by project, and the utilities are certainly laser focused on that.
All right, Paul, anything else real quickly?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you about this city of Tucson considering buying TEP. Where's the Arizona Commission, Corporation Commission on that?
I mean, I will say I've watched that carefully also. So not without my commission head on, as someone from Tucson,
sure.
Someone who's in this space, I don't think that's realistic. Okay. I think that the cost to acquire a utility like Tucson Electric Power, they're spending, you would know better than me, but something like $200,000 or $300,000 on consultants to write a proposal on what this would cost.
Right.
That doesn't seem realistic. There are so much of an energy demand and so much work that Tucson Electric Power does. To ensure that we have energy reliability, this does not make sense to me. And that's just me as one person in Southern Arizona, and the Corporation Commission certainly hasn't taken a position.
Generating capacity for the summer looks okay?
Yeah, so we host a summer preparedness meeting. It's coming up pretty soon. Anyone can dial in and listen and watch and hear from each of our largest utilities about how they're preparing for the summer. And I want to confirm for people, even if that meeting happens in March, that doesn't mean that's when we started thinking about it. This has been years in the making. How do we prepare? What weather projections are coming? What kind of demand are we seeing based on residential and commercial development occurring? So all of those calculations go into place, and we've done a really great job, and our utilities have it, ensuring energy reliability.
I'll make a prediction based on the past couple of years. It's going to be a real hot summer.
It's probably going to be very hot.
I think we're
hot,
safe to say that. Leah Marquez Peterson, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
And Paul, stick around. Got a couple of quick questions
for
Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com. Take a break. Buckmaster comes right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, plowing into segment number three with Paul Ingram, who does a great job over at TucsonSentinel.com. One of his many talents is covering the border and immigration. He's also a very good photographer. In fact, won top place for Arizona news photography from the Arizona Press Club.
Thanks, Bill.
It's really sad, Paul, that some of these people had waited up to a year for an appointment in Nogales to try to come into this country legally.
Right.
And when January 20th happened, there were appointments.
Right.
That
yeah.
were canceled.
Yeah. So there's this program called, it was called CBP One. And CBP One is an app that U.S. Customs and Border Protection had actually built for lots of things, but was started being used. The idea was, is if you wanted to come and you wanted to seek asylum, you could schedule an appointment and you could, you know, right. and you, once you went to your appointment, you'd go to a port of entry or one of the border crossings. Mm-hmm. In Nogales, it's the Denis de Cincini, which is right downtown Nogales. Mm-hmm. And you'd go up and basically kind of state your claim. And mm-hmm. you would go through the process. And a lot of times people would go through the process and then they'd be released with the idea that they would then go in front of an immigration judge and really plead their case that sure. they deserve asylum. And you see lots and lots of people who went through these cases. And then the thing is on January 20th, during right after the inauguration of President Trump, they canceled all the appointments. And the process for doing this was really messy. And you know, they canceled appointments while people were actually in the building and actually in the middle of their appointment. Mm. And unfortunately, wow. a lot of those people, folks at the Kenya Border Initiative who were based in Nogales, you know, they said those people were actually sent to the Eloy Detention Center. So they were asked to come to request asylum through a legal process. And when they got cut off, they were sent to Eloy instead, which is a place usually for people who've been who are being prosecuted for immigration.
These are people that was trying to do it the right way.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, it's something that was part of the idea was is to minimize having people stay at the ports. It's to minimize also to keep people from trying to cross through the desert or coming through the country, you know, without authorization. It's really supposed to be a legal process. And it's a bit ad hoc, but it's been working for a couple of years since they implemented it under the Biden administration, and now it's gone. And one thing I think was sort of striking is to see people who were at the port who had appointments later that day or the next day who were sort of stuck and they didn't know what to do. And they were really asking humanitarians, they were asking even me, like, what should I do?
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have any good answers for them. They're just going to have to wait. And so what we see is now a lot of people in shelters in Nogales who are kind of waiting to see, and they're not sure what else to do. You know, I'm always struck by the number of how much people spend and all the effort they go through. I once talked to two guys who were from Nepal. And they had spent $30,000 traveling across the world. They'd gone through 12 countries. They finally got to Mexico. They got into the United States. They crossed in Sasebe. You know, for somebody like that, you say, well, you're not going to be allowed in. They don't know what else to do because they've spent so much time to this to get to this last moment in their travel. They there isn't a kind of a next step.
There's
stuck.
No plan B at that point.
Exactly.
How are we doing? You've been trying to keep track of what's going on with immigration, rounding up illegal folks who have criminal records.
Right. I mean, there's been, of course, the Trump administration said that they were going to go through, do mass deportations originally, and now they're saying they're going to go after people with criminal records, criminal backgrounds. And what we've seen is just right now, just very, very targeted arrests. One of our reporters actually caught one at a Home Depot last weekend, and that arrest was really after two guys, and it was aimed at those two guys. There was one yesterday that was somebody who had a warrant out for their arrest, and then there was one in Phoenix, which has caught a lot of news, in part because the ICE agents decided to use stun grenades and an armored vehicle to go and arrest a single guy. So we're definitely seeing that. The Department of Justice actually released something recently, just today, actually this morning, that they've arrested about 500 people for immigration-related crimes in Arizona. But that only doesn't include people picked up by ICE, but also people picked up by Border Patrol who were arrested in the desert and then who are now being prosecuted for illegal entry.
The Attorney General, Chris Mayes, was our Friday Focus interview last Friday, Paul, and she was saying that some Native American First Nation people in Arizona had been mistakenly targeted.
Right, right.
They're Native Americans,
yeah,
right?
And I know like people in the Passamaquoddy and the Tohono O'odham have also had kind of similar problems. I haven't heard anything of that recently, but that's been kind of a long-term thing. And you know, there's a lot of complexity there. I mean, there's people who, you know, the things that's difficult, of course, is when a federal official says, prove you're a citizen.
Right.
I mean, that's not the easiest thing. I mean, I can because I've got my passport in my car because I go to Mexico all the time.
But, yeah.
But to sort of say, prove you're a citizen, if you don't really have documents because you've always lived on one of the res your entire life, you may not really have that. And for them to go into places, and we kind of think of the nations or reservations as being kind of out in the middle of nowhere, the Navajo, but a lot of these, you know, extend into metropolitan areas. I mean, South Tucson is, you know, dips into the Passamaquoddy. And so I think you'll see these kinds of things happening more often. And I think it's important for people to really pay attention to these things about how, you know, how federal officials are treating people. If they're saying, hey, are you supposed to be in this country? They should really be thoughtful about who they're targeting.
Very complex. All right, Paul, where can people find out more about you and the work you do and your team?
Oh, they can always go to TucsonSentinel.com and take a look at our work. We've got a great team together who do a lot of interesting reporting. And always, you know, just go to our website. You can also follow us on social media and see what we're about. But we do a lot of on-the-ground reporting. I've driven about 1,000 miles in the last couple of weeks just going to the border.
Oh, so, <my goodness. laughs> Is there a charge to look at the work? Do you have to pay?
We are free. We really subscribe because people want to donate to us and when they want to subscribe. If you subscribe, we'll send you a newsletter every day and every couple of days and, you know, let you know what we've got. But no, actually, we've done that intentionally. We don't have a paywall. So come to our site, read our stuff, and hopefully you like it enough to send us some cash.
All right. Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks Paul, and say hi to the team for me.
Will
okay?
do.
All right. Coming up next, Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We'll be our Weekend Watch team from 101.7 The Drive will be with us right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
It's time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Make your weekend getaway, well, turn it into an enchanting one in the land of enchantment. Start your planning now by visiting their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Now, here from 101.7 The Drive, Mr. Matt Gentry, the very popular morning host on The Drive. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hello, sir. Can I just say what an awesome voice you have?
Thank you very much.
I've been meaning to tell you that in a public forum. I'm like, Bill, you have such a great velvety voice,
Matt. Well, thank you very much. And I probably, you know, I hesitated at the beginning of the show today. We were always talking about I'm starting my 37th year in Tucson broadcasting. Wow. But I normally don't say that we're pushing nearly 60 years in the business. And that goes back to 1967 as an intern in Chicago at WIND. But I still look pretty young
for
a guy that's been in the business that
long.
All right, what's going on this weekend?
Well, tomorrow we're going to be at the gift shop Spirits Child. We're going to be there from 11 to 1.
You guys do a great job over there.
They love us.
They do.
And you know that all the advertisers, at any time we do a live broadcast, they love it because our station brings out, I mean, it's pretty normal to have 50 people show up. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. Our listeners are so loyal. A lot like KVOI listeners.
Yeah, they're super loyal people. You know? Mm-hmm.
So we have that going on tomorrow, 11 to 1. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Beach Boys. That's a big one. We're excited about that. They're going to be at Casino del Sol May 3rd.
Oh, really?
You a Beach Boys fan?
Well, I saw them in 1965.
Say no more.
Yeah.
You saw them in their
in
prime.
In Chicago. Oh, yeah. All the originals were there.
I love it. And then, of course, the Tucson Rodeo kicks off next weekend. So
you've been involved with the rodeo for years.
I have. My grandfather was the president of the downtown Tucson Lions Club. Mm-hmm. And I've been volunteering at the rodeo since I was 8.
Wow.
Yeah. I love the rodeo. It's great. It's my favorite.
One of the things that's so much fun about the show you do something called Drive It or Park It. What is that about?
Well, it's an opportunity for the listeners to have a say in what we play. So I play a song that we normally don't play, and then they vote on it. Mm-hmm. It's become very popular.
What do you think it breaks at, about 50-50 acceptance or rejection?
Honestly, I would say the songs are generally driven more. About a 70-30.
Oh.
Yeah, but once in a while, you never know. You could put up a song and you could be like, oh, this is going to be great. And then it fails.
Yeah.
And just the opposite. You think, this is not going to do good. And then everybody loves it.
Yeah. One of the things people like about The Drive, you really do want input from the listeners.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a station that is just... turned out to be so popular, especially folks that kind of some from my generation, a little bit later, and people want to remember something because a song can bring back an instant memory.
Matt Absolutely,
Gentry.
Yep.
Matt Gentry, always a pleasure. We'll look for your work.
Thank you, sir.
In the morning on The Drive, The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications LLC. Which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to Matt Gentry and Tom Fairbanks spinning the dials on the other side of the glass. Hope everybody has a great weekend.